real six. We were talking about how you were repairing an A squadron tank at Veer, V-I-R-R-E, when you became aware that the Germans were on both sides of it. So they were not only what you'd call to the front. Where else were they then?
Well, as far as we knew, we didn't really know, except we found some over the back, which over the field behind us, where we didn't expect them at the time. Apart from that, we didn't know where they were. And they started belting away with their tank guns, H-8s anyway. And the tank commander said to me, "Oi, you better get it sharpish. And, because it looks like we're going to have to move in a hurry." And just then, I got out, and then a few shells came in, and we all got underneath the tank for a minute. And then I don't know what happened. There's a hell of a bang, and something hit me at the back of the head, and I flaked out. I came round a bit 10 minutes afterwards, still under the tank with the other people there, and I'd been wounded, and so one of the other lads. And there's an officer there, I didn't know, he's one of the 504th officers, but I didn't know him. And he's been shot straight through the legs, one side, here one side, at the other side of the cheek. And he lost some of his teeth and part of his jaw. And somebody else's half track came up. I don't know whose it was. It wasn't ours. Half track came over and picked us all up. We all ran to this half track, and they took us back, and they took us back to the field dressing station.
Now, what had happened to you? You'd been knocked out, but
Evan is an HE. High explosive shell had gone off, and I'd been hit by shrapnel.
In the head?
Head and back. When I came to, there was 92 separate little bits of shrapnel. Most of them were not to be worried about. And it was lucky I was wearing one of the new fashions, and, you know, we had the new shaped tin hats by then. If it had been the old fashioned basin thing, we'd have come underneath it. But with the new ones, it had hit the tin hat and gone through it and hit me at the back of the head and at the back of the neck. I had 4 pieces in the skull, and I was in my back.
But you were able to move, run about, because you ran for the...
I ran.
How long had you been out? Or were you just knocked?
I should imagine about 5 or 6 minutes, not very long. No more than 10 minutes.
And did you know you were wounded?
Not until I came round.
No, but I mean...
Yeah, when I came round I did. Yeah.
Were you bleeding quite badly, or...?
I was bleeding, and it was very, very painful. It was painful. When I say very, very, you know...
And where were
they?
How far? What were the Germans doing? This was just artillery fire, was it?
I don't know, because I don't know what happened after that. I didn't hear any more for a long time.
And do you know what date this was? You said early August, but
I think it was August Bank Holiday. I think it was the first Monday in August. I mean, it didn't really count as much count of time, you know.
But it was at Veer.
Yeah, and I think it was August Bank Holiday. It was early, it was a Monday, I know that. And it was very early in August. It was either the first or second Monday in August. And they took me back to the field dressing place. They took 2 pieces out of a shrapnel in my head. One they couldn't get out. So they put me in an ambulance, took me down to somewhere, where there was an airfield, and I was flown out of France into, and then put into the hospital again at Aldershot.
And what medical treatment did you get?
My operator on took this last bit out of my head.
How big were these operations? Or, I mean, Had they broken the skull? I mean, the fragments, or were they in inside? You know, between the skin and the head, or do you not know?
One piece, the piece they couldn't get out of. The two pieces they got, the ones they took all the stuff out of back. That was no problem. The two pieces they took out in France were really no problem. They were in the back of the neck, and they were stuck in. They were stuck into me, but they were in the fleshy part of the neck, and they were just, it just took them out, simple. But the one that I did in Aldershot had penetrated the steel helmet, and it's up near the top of the cranium, and it had penetrated the skin and penetrated the skull. There's no danger, it hadn't penetrated the brain at all, or anything like that. But it was a bit more difficult to get out, and they needed an anaesthetic to take it out. And so we did it for the order shot. And I came round after they'd done it, realised where I was, and thought, good, back at order shot, only 15 miles from Eastleigh again. And the nurse rang my girlfriend, told her where I was, and to everybody's surprise again, my whole family turned up that afternoon to see who I was. And once again, nobody had anything about you. So they, I think they were just spiteful. They realised I was near home, so they sent me up to Sheffield on the train. And I went to a hospital in Rotherham. And I was in that hospital for 6 weeks. So it must have been a bit worse than I thought it was. Been leaving there for 6 weeks. I thought I was perfectly all right.
And what other medical treatment did you get during that whole period?
A lot of physiotherapy. And that was it, mainly physiotherapy. And once again, I said, I didn't know why, because I thought I was all right. I seemed to be.
Why did you need physiotherapy? I mean,
I don't really know. I thought I was all right. I seemed to be getting around all right, but in the hospital, they seemed to be very worried about it.
Did you have difficulty walking, or?
No, I didn't think so, but they were very worried. And I think, from what one of the nurses told me, I think they were a bit worried. The nerves might have been affected.
In your back?
Back and in the skull, possibly. I think that's what, think from what the nurse said, I think that's what I was worried about. But I thought I was okay, I didn't think there was anything wrong. And, anyway, I was there for 6 weeks, and they sent me to convalescent depot at Leeds. And then they sent me to another convalescent depot at Halifax.
And how long were you convalescing in all? You were in hospital till September, I suppose, 6 weeks?
Yeah. Came away, left the convalescent depot. End of September.
About 2 weeks in all, then?
Yeah.
In two or 3 weeks.
Yeah. August, September, yeah. Oh, was that... No, one I couldn't have been in the hospital for as long as I thought I was. Because I know that I went home on leave from the convalescent depot. And the last week of September. And while I was home, we made arrangements to get married. We made arrangements to get married on the 12th of December. And I went back on, it must have been the 28th, 29th of September. I went back to Catterick.
Now, what made you decide to get married then, as opposed to any other time?
What, 12th of December?
Then, you know, but during
Well, I didn't think I was, well, from what they told me at convalescent depot, I didn't think I would be going back to my unit for a few months. They said that I would have to stay in England for a while. We wanted to get married. And it wasn't easy in those days. You couldn't just go in and get married. You had to book up in advance and things like that. And so we made arrangements to get married on the 12th of December. We think, you know, that's far enough ahead. Give everybody time to do things. We arranged leave, everything like that. And so that's when the arrangements that we made, Ada and I made, and my family made. We get married 12th of December. And I went back to Catterick camp. Because when I went on leave, I was told to go from, I went from Halifax, but I was told to report back to Catterick. I went to go back to Catterick on, must have been the 29th, 30th of September. Reported back, and they said, oh yes, good, you're going back to your unit next week. Well then, they were in Holland, I think. And yeah, they said, you're going back to your unit next week. And I said, no, I'm not, I'm going to get married. Rang Ada up and said, get a special license for next week. She said, why? And I said, well, we're supposed to be going back. So I want to get married before we go back. And so she got a special license. I went to see the adjutant at Catterick and told him the arrangements I'd made. And he said, well, you're going to have to get proof of that first. So I got the vicar to get in touch with the camp and let them know this was definitely on. And we made arrangements then to get married on the 4th of October, thinking that I would be going back on the week up, you know, after that leave, and going back to the 5th and 4th of January, in the second or third week in October. Anyway, I got home on the 3rd of October, the day before we'd be to get married, to be greeted with the news that the bloke we'd going to be best man had been recalled to his unit. And he'd gone, and we were looking, and at 9 o'clock at night, the day before we'd get married, we were looking for a new best man. We couldn't find one, and we were just going into the house, and a friend of mine who lived next but one to us came up the road. He'd just come in on leave for a few days from the Navy. So the next thing he knew, he was best man. It was a terrific rush for the family, because getting everything ready. Everybody mucked in. People had lobbed their rations in to make sure there was a meal for the guests and everything. And we went along and got married. And everybody was saying, well, yeah, going to get married in December. Got married in October. Yeah. And they were wrong. That wasn't the reason we got married. Anyway, as I said, we got married. And I went back to the unit on the Monday following the wedding. The wedding was on Wednesday. And I went back to Catterick on the Monday to be greeted with, I'm sorry, we've made a mistake, you're not going back to your unit yet. So you're just staying here for a bit until we can get rid of you. You have no duties, you're just here. You're waiting to be posted. So I stayed at Catterick then until the end of November, when I was sent down to Brandon in Suffolk again. We went to Brandon when we first came back from the Middle East, and then I was sent back to the same camp again, to a different regiment, a holding unit again. And we were told that we would be going back to our various units, all of us there, immediately in the new year. And we thought, good, that would give us a chance to have Christmas at home. Unfortunately, the army didn't see it that way. And there was orders sent out that all Christmas leave was to be cancelled. And all New Year's leave was to be cancelled. Now, that didn't please anybody very much. And the commanding officer of this holding unit, I don't know who it was really, I was told it was Colonel Wigg. But I don't think it could have been really. Because I always thought he was an administrative officer. No, he's an MP. I always thought he was an administrator. But people said it was at Colonel Wigg. I don't think so. Anyhow, the Colonel of the establishment also took a dim view of this. So he made us go on exercises over Christmas and New Year. All the English people, the Scots people who made to stay in camp over Christmas, all the English people were taken onto these trucks, driven into the centre of Cambridge, dropped off in the square in front of the station, and told, as an exercise initiative, we were to make our own way back to the camp by the 29th of December. This was the 23rd of December. Which gave all of us time to nip into the station, get railway tickets to wherever we happened to live, go home, catch a train back to Cambridge on the 28th of September, and make our way back to Brandon, 6 miles away, by the 29th. For New Year, the same thing happened for the Scottish troops. Which proves that there were some officers in the army who were human.
He must have been very popular. Were you having any after effects? What state were you in?
I was perfectly all right. Perfectly all right. I didn't know I didn't know why I was having all this physiotherapy. I didn't know what I needed it for. I didn't think it was necessary, but they did, fair enough. They were the experts. I'm not a medical man. They were the experts. Anyhow, I went back to... There was about 12, 13, 14 of us from the 54th Yeomanry there, and we all went back to the unit about the 4th or 5th of January. we went from Harwich to Ostend, stayed in Ostend for a couple of days, and then were bussed down to the unit, who were then at Ypres, or as my dad called it, Wipers. And then we got down there, and I did what I always seemed to be doing. I was waiting for the unit. Because over Christmas and New Year, they'd all been scrambled to go down to the breakthrough. But I always forget.
Ardennes.
The Ardennes. And so we were just waiting there. Evidently, the regiment had gone to Ypres to be re-equipped to have their Shermans taken away and to be re-equipped with the new tank. They put their tanks into the holding yard at Brussels, went back to Ypres to wait for their new tanks to come. We were told to go back to Brussels, pick up their old ones, or Shermans, not necessarily their old ones, and down to the Ardennes. And so we were just stuck waiting for them to get back. We've been there about a week, and they all arrived back in dribs and drabs, and we got issued with these new tanks.
Now, firstly, what was the state of the unit? Because you'd left them in the start of August, this is now January. 4 months later.
No, they weren't there. They'd all gone. All the support people were there again. Headquarters, And the administrative people have been left behind because they had to arrange billets and everything like that. But I didn't know what the unit was like, because all the people I saw were the administrative staff that had been left behind.
No, but when they came back?
Oh, they were a lot of new faces. But there was a lot of people. I got, once again, this was something I'd never run up against before in my other end. People were coming back to their own unit. In the Middle East, where we were, we used to go out and join a reinforcer, other people's units. You didn't go back to your own regiment necessarily. And this was something I personally hadn't run up against before. This is this family business again. You came back to join the family. Obviously, there were fresh faces of people who had been killed. But casualties were nowhere near as heavy. Don't get me wrong when I say that. As you would have expected in the First World War. And when my dad was in the First World War, he was at Gallipoli and he's then in Flanders. And he told me what the trench warfare was like and what the casualties were like. And the average expectation for every ordinary.
Yeah. But, so, when you rejoined, I mean, was it recognised, I mean, were your friends still there? I mean, was it the same unit? Or?
When they came back, yes, the same people were still there, except I didn't go back to B Squadron.
So who were you posted to this time?
HQ Squadron.
And what was your job at HQ Squadron?
Still electrician.
And were you supernumerary or were
no,
you the...
I was electrician. I was one of the, we had two electricians in HQ, I was one of the two electricians.
So you're a fitter electrician?
No, electrician. Not fitter.
Not right, yeah, sorry.
Electrician. And there, the sergeant was this Dave Finley I told you about. You know, when I spoke to you about yesterday. Smashing bloke. Everybody liked him.
And who else was in HQ Squadron at the time? Any other characters?
To be honest, I don't remember names. I know people. I can remember people very well. I remember, but I don't remember. I can't fit names to people.
So
I mean, I remember some people like Gordon Fiddler, like Alec Christie. Yeah, I remember individuals. And although I didn't know it at the time, until I met him again, Jeff. I wouldn't say we were great mates.
This is Jeff Hayward again.
Jeff Hayward. We knew each other and we were reasonably friendly. Well, I wouldn't say we were great mates, but when I heard his name when the association was formed, I couldn't put a name to a face until I met him again.
So what were they like as a bunch? And not so much as individuals then, but you know, what were they like? You say you remember them as people. What were they like as people?
They were still the family. This is what I said about being 5-4 for unit. 5-4 for Yeomanry. They were different than the Hussars or the other units I've been with. They were a family. You belonged to a family. You were part of a family. And you were absorbed into the family. And they looked after each other. They really did look after each other. It was a different feeling there.
No.
I'm sorry just to like you harping on that. To me, it was a different feeling.
So how long were you at Ypres for?
We were there until... We were about 6 weeks.
So into February?
Yeah, end of January, beginning of February when we crossed the Rhine.
Now, what about these new Comet tanks? What were the main differences between the Comet and the Sherman?
It had a different engine. The big difference was it was a lower slung tank. It had an RAF Merlin engine, a Meteor engine. Good engine. It's far easier to work on because it's readily accessible. This is something we find generally with British tanks. The bits you wanted to work on were accessible, not hidden away. It had a different tank gun. We had a 17 pounder instead of a 77 mil. It was a lower muscle trajectory. Sorry, lower muscle velocity, but it's extremely accurate. far more accurate than the 77 had been. And with HE, with high explosive shells, it was a very, very good gun. It, well, because of a low mass velocity, it wasn't quite as good as it with armour piercing. But by then, things were, although I didn't know it at the time, things were watered considerably. The days of the tank battles were over, but we didn't know that at the time. But we were in Ypres for quite a while.
How did you get on with the civilians?
Right. We were there for quite a long time, and we were billeted with civilian families. I was billeted with a family. The father of the family had been in the Belgian army during the First War, and he was made governor of a prison in the town. There were two daughters, one, Yvonne. We were all like brother and sister. She was engaged to an RAF bloke, the sergeant of the RAF, who came to Wallasey, who came from Wallasey. And this is the way we were there. We were treated as members of the family. And we, you know, we settled in so easily there. Many of the, several of the members of the regiment met their future wives there. Several of them married to the girls from Belgium. Many of us kept in touch for a lot till long after the war with the people we were affiliated with. I didn't leave touch with Yvonne and her husband till well after the war. I did lose touch eventually. When we were, it was funny because when, later on, when we were in Germany, I got a letter came through from Belgium as the invitation to their wedding. In other words, I could get back, we was war went over. But we were, I think we probably got deployed into the civil life there better than anywhere we'd ever been. Better than anywhere I'd ever been anyway.
Anything else happened while you were at Ypres?
Only the things connected with the First World War. We went, obviously, we went to the Menin Gate. And had a look at that and heard the service at night.
Did that make an impression on you?
Yes, it did, because my dad had been there in the First World War. He told me what it was like there. He told me how town had been destroyed, and I was most impressed by the way it had been rebuilt. And there were the trenches outside the town which had been kept as a memorial, as a museum, and they were still there, just as they had been. The Germans hadn't destroyed them at all and interfered with them in any way. And we went there and had a look at those. And yes, it did affect me. It made me feel, I don't know quite how to put that, but in view of what my father told me and how he had described life in the First World War, it made me sentimental? Yeah, I suppose so. Mm.
So that's it then for Ypres.
Yeah.
And your next move was forward?
Forward across the Rhine. And then we seemed to be moving all the time.
Were you part of the contested crossing of the Rhine, or were you just moving forward in reserve?
I don't know that whether remember, we were never, as fitter troop, we were never at the front line, sort of thing. Whether they met any problems with going across the Rhine or not, I don't know. I don't think so. I never seem to remember hearing of anybody being lost going across the Rhine. But, then on, we seemed to be moving forward all the time. The opposition we came up against didn't seem to be from tanks anymore. It seemed to be from isolated infantry units. And that's why the new gun with its high HE capability was so valuable. But it didn't affect us very much. We just seemed to go forward. We had more repairs to do,